Hey everybody, Stu Smith here with another Tactical Fitness Report, and we have Jeff Nichols back. Jeff, for coming back. It's been a while. I know we've both been a little bit busy. What's new in your world?
Oh yeah, we're just a new puppy, and we are prepping for the second class coming up here in a couple of days. So we have another 18 guys coming from around the, you know, around the place, around the United States, coming to spend 6 weeks with us.
Nice.
That's what we've been, you know, that's kind of our build up for that administratively has kind of kept you and I apart as well. So just mutually doing stuff for the summer.
Yeah. Well, my winter lift cycle went well, and I wanted to say thank you. And I appreciate your feedback. When I first started it, I was like, hey, Jeff, I know you do a lot of block periodization with your guys. So here's my idea. My idea was to do 3 weeks of strength training, followed by, instead of a deload week, turn it into a kind of a strength deload, but more of a PST focused calisthenics cardio week. And we hadn't really done this before. And plus, we're outside all winter, which kind of sucked. So we had to kind of run a little more than we were used to just to stay warm when we were lifting. So we would put in these little quarter mile runs in there, you know, so guys were able to finish the winter lift cycle. They got stronger. They were able to maintain your PST scores. Several even got better PST scores in it, better runs, which never happens in a lift cycle for us typically. They usually just maintain or have to kind of rebuild once spring gets here. But I think that block periodization was the answer to many people that were in that ballpark of having to have good PST scores, you know, to get into the training. But they also needed to add some strength just to help them be a little more durable when they're going through all the load bearing activities of logs and boats and rucking and all of that stuff that
they
have to do.
Right.
So it was a good answer. So I appreciate your feedback.
Yeah, you bet. On that. Yeah. I think that, you know, some guys, and it's weird because you almost encounter this sort of scenario with what you did with some of the guys, with guys that are like very athletic and have had a history of athletics, but not really focused on like the PST sort of testing parameters. Right. And so you have guys that have like good strength endurance. And then what you do is like their runtime doesn't improve. And then you do this very acute strength specific resistance training. And now what you've done is you've increased the leg's ability to basically change direction, come off the ground, right? Better. And then that's because people are like, well, I need stronger legs. And like, well, isn't running doing that? It's like, no. Like when someone is referring to leg strength, right? Mathematically, we're saying either carrying a heavy load over distance or strength almost can be used. You already said it's kind of like almost defined as resiliency, bounce back.
Yeah.
Its ability to continually contract at a higher average force. That's strength, right? And that's like what you're seeing is like, oh, you had to develop the neurology, his nervous system, so that way he could express himself with a faster run. And it wasn't necessarily through running. So it creates a conundrum that we probably would confuse people, but that's where we say it's like, hey, sometimes it is leg strength. You need to develop a little bit of leg strength so your already good aerobic running capability can express itself. Because the limiting factor isn't aerobic, right? It's not your lungs. It's not your blood. It's not your heart. It's your, it's called like your muscle strength and its ability to bounce back like a rubber band.
Yeah. And be a little more durable.
You bet. And that's
again, to handle that volume. Yeah,
exactly. Strength is mathematically expressed, or durability is mathematically expressed in strength. Yes,
absolutely. Yeah. So anyway, that's a good point, because a lot of times during my normal winter lift cycle, it would be a 12 or 13 week lift cycle, which is really a long time. And we would see every 3 or 4 weeks, these plateaus that would occur. Right. And I knew they were coming. So we'd always have that deload week, scheduled in there. And that would help to, you know, bounce back, you know, kind of recover a little bit, bounce back, come back the next week a little bit stronger, starting to see some progress again. I just wanted to try it out with, you know, focusing on, you know, different energy systems altogether and just kind of resting the strength side and the power side, and let's focus on some calisthenics and cardio just for a week. And then came right into it, into the next cycle. And we saw that strength progression still moving, as well as a decent cardiovascular maintenance. So anyway, it was sometimes when you're having those plateaus, whether it's in running or swimming or lifting or whatever, you know, a deload week with a different focus, you know, can help you, you know, get through those things versus piling on more.
Yeah.
I think there's a podcast you and I did, Less is More, you know, sometimes that is when less is more.
Yeah. And so, and honestly, like you hit the nail on the head, like honestly, folks, like when people, it's such a common question. Hey, I'm plateauing. What do I do? Change a program, modify. No. Like what we're trying to say is that, like, you know, when it comes to like all of this stuff, really comes down to a lot of patience, you know, really what it comes down to. And recognize if you're into the program, you know, recognizing when you're hitting that plateau. And then it really is like, oh my God, what do I do? Okay. It's like, well, no, just recognize what it is. Your body just needs to go. It's like, well, we've exhausted your current body's, the state of your body, to adapt in that stimulus. So we need to change stimulus so we can get further adaptation. And it's not like, oh my God, I've hit a plateau. It's like, oh, I've come to the end of this stimulus. Now, great, I know I've hit my end. So now I know when I make a change, there's more benefit to even be had. So it's almost like you shouldn't dread the plateau. You should say when it shows up, go, okay, now I know for sure I need to change my stimulus. Boom, slam dunk.
Yeah, just Google overload principle.
There you go.
That's really what we're doing. We're trying to achieve a certain level of overload to where you're going to see diminished gains. Yeah. That's when it's working. But you have to answer that properly by letting yourself recover, do something else. Just, I mean, it can be as little as a week, right? And then come back in the next day, at next week, and start it back up again. And next thing you know,
there's no difference between like what we said before. It's like, hey, your PST coming up. You don't do anything a couple days prior, right? But, you know, leading up to that, you want to stimulate the nervous system and get it, because what we want to go into that tested PST as rested as possible, right? Because you're not going to improve training in a 3-day window. Like, there's no 3-day, 4-day, 5-day. Oh my God, I got to get better in my PST in a week. Like, it's not going to happen, you know? Yep. And so that's what we get. We get the questions about tips and all that sort of stuff that tends to rear its head. So again, what Stu and I have done is we've laid out the process for you guys. And modification of that process will only make sense when you run through our programs a few times, make some mistakes and do some things and communicate with us. And then, you know, the longer you're in the process, actually the less you need of us. If you're following our principles and heeding our advice, the more you do our programs, the less you need us. Honestly.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, what I write may be a little confusing. Email me, ask me a question like, what did you mean by this? Right? Because the last thing I want you to do is 10 times more than what I had suggested, or 10 times less. You know, it's something that are a very common question. Another common question that is a little bit more of a pet peeve for me, and I think we've talked about this once before, Jeff, but I wanted to kind of differentiate about the type of advice you really need when you're asking a question is, when you ask for, hey, do you have any tips to run faster? Do you have any tips to get through this selection? Do you have any tips for buds? Have any tip? You know, that's a really bad question because it's going to require me to ask you 3 or 4 questions to actually give you a good answer to that. You know, I can give you a tip. A tip is basically, if you look in Webster's, a tip is just insider information, which is fairly useless. You know, I'm going to say, don't quit. You know, you want a tip, don't quit. You want a tip, make it.
If you want a tip, get in a good program. If you want a good tip, create a good timeline. All these things that we keep talking about, like the greatest tip we can offer really is from the time I decide to join the Navy to the time I go see my recruiter, that's the tip. The tip is, getting good programming, create a good timeline, listen to our advice. That's my tip. Now, yeah. If you need training guidance and advice, you have to come specifically what Stu says, like identify to the best of your ability your own weaknesses. Like, hey, I'm having trouble with my running, and here are my splits that demonstrate my difficulty with running. Like, here's my quarter mile splits over 3 miles, and go, Stu, help me out. Why I here's my splits, but I don't even know what I'm looking at. But you said to get my splits. Awesome. Then, man, we can help you out a ton from there.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you're so vague and you say, how do you got any tips for running? Yeah, I got a lot of tips for running.
A ton.
You know, do you want to run a 5K? Do you want to run a marathon? Do you want to run sprints? Do you want to run agility ladders? You know, what are you trying to do? You know, it's just your question's no good, you know, when you ask it that vaguely. So there are no tips. There are no secret sauce, you know, and secrets, right, to getting through any of this, you know, but there are processes. There are strategies and there's programming. That is a better way to answer people when they ask for tips. As I say, well, you know, I got a lot of tips, but what you need is a process, and you need to set a good timeline. And I even go as far as, you know, don't even set a timeline yet. Let's assess yourself and let's set a starting line, right? Your performance is going to, if you reach these numbers, now you're ready to set a timeline.
Right.
Until you can reach these numbers, you have no business talking to a recruiter. You have no business even setting a timeline. Let's focus on these events that you have to pass to get into the training first. Then, you know, we can figure out what programming you need to do that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I think that because the reality, the tips as people perceive them to be, the pieces of advice, the little simple little nuggets that are helpful, we can only really offer them as help once you've been in the programming, right? Once you are involved in our programming, right? And you speak the language that we speak because you've listened to our advice, you've watched our videos, you see how we communicate in the programs. Once you do that, then you come with questions, right? And within those questions, we provide tips because the tips that we provide will make sense only in the context of you doing programming. Right. So it's like, you can't give anyone advice until they're in the process to receive the advice, right? Because we can't say, hey, like someone's like, hey, I want to be a buds. I want to go to be a SEAL. I'm like, okay, how old are you? I'm 17. Have you ever lifted weights in your life? No. Have you ever ran your life? No. Okay, the tips for this individual are vastly different than the someone that's like, hey, I just graduated from University of Nebraska as an All-American wrestler. I want to go, here's my numbers, and I want to go be a SEAL. Very different from that guy, okay? So when you as an individual think that your problems are unique, they're not in any way. But what we do need to have some information on your, air quotes, unique life. So we can give you proper guidance and tips.
Yeah, that's a good point, you know, because there are tips that you can receive from us and coaches in general when you're in a certain program, when you're taking a PST. You know, there are ways to place your hands. There's ways to engage your lats, you know, and there's ways to use your hip flexors more when you do sit-ups. Those are tips that you can add to your programming and your workouts that will make those exercises be able to perform those exercises better. So that is how, in my head, when people ask for tips, those are the kind of tips that run through my head. There are no general tips to say
for a starter, for a beginner, it's to
get through selection. I mean, come on.
Yeah, when I hear tips, I think I'm watching the Golf Channel and the guy that's professional golfer's like, hey, here's a tip of the day. It's like the implication or what is implied is that not only is the person that's giving advice, the person receiving advice is adamant about practicing golf, right? So a tip can only be useful if it can be applied to something that is already in motion, right? Or in its build, in its construction, right? It's like, you know, because a tip is also implies a bit of a change, modification, improvement. And you can only improve upon what you're already doing.
Yeah. You know, so, another tip, like we were talking before the show was, you know, when you're training technique, you want to train technique easy, right? But you want to train strength hard.
Yeah.
Right. So there's two different ways. There's a tip right there. You know,
but it would only make sense in the context of if you've been working through our programs, right? Yeah. Then the tip can be definite. It can be definite to the individual.
Yeah. Like this morning I was coaching swimming. I saw a couple of errors that just by, you know, gliding like this versus like this.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It will make you a little more streamlined with your head down. Bet. That's a good tip. Right? I mean, it's, I'm not teaching you how to swim by doing this to this, but yes. that is the value of a tip.
Right.
That is a coaching critique that will help you perform just a little bit better in what you are already doing. There are no tips in things that you are not doing.
Yeah. It's like my website, guys, like you want tips. We got 135 videos or something like that. Those are 135 tips.
There you go.
There. So that's like every Instagram post relative to a movement pattern or an exercise or a lift is a tip. Right. And so I get that. Like everyone, it's a huge, here's the thing is, and I know it's certainly not a malicious statement. No one's maliciously asking this or anything, but it's like, you got to understand, like, you have to understand the volume of questions that Stu and you know, really I say I, but Catherine, and we receive is like, we receive a lot of questions and the inquiry is pretty similar in a lot of things. And there is a very common thread of questions that come in from people that are intimately in the process. Their questions reflect a certain personality. And then there's some that have just kind of begun and they're trying to figure it out and they're nuking it to death. And you can see what sort of mental wherewithal that they've taken within to that. And then you have a guys that just ask this, like, hey man, where's the tips? Like there's no emotional investment from my standpoint with that person. It's like, if someone understands the gravity of what they're asking, hey man, like we're going to the most difficult training selection program on the planet. I have no background in how to prepare for it, but how about you just give me some tips? Like it's odd. It's you go, hey man, like you've been invited to the New York Yankees, whatever training camp. You might want to show up the glove, right? It's like someone that says, hey man, I want some tips. They're completely just showing up to the party and going, hey man, I want to be part of this, but have no background in it. And that's what we see. So it's like, as a coach, I'm going to be like, well, this person clearly isn't invested in their future. I'm not going to invest in this email.
You know, and hey, I will say this, you know, most of the people that ask those questions are teenagers and they're young, you know, and there's a reason why I have an opinion. And now, like, there's a difference between opinions and facts, right? My opinion is 18-year-olders have no business going to Buds.
Agreed.
Right. And that is my opinion, right? And I don't expect, it is proven wrong every year. There are 18-year-olds.
Every class, someone that's 18 graduates. Yeah.
Yes. It is proven wrong every year. But the statistics behind that are fact. Right.
Pretty substantial
failure rate of teenagers going to Buds. And the reason why I nick on teenagers here is because they're the ones asking for tips. You know, it's the young guys that are asking for tips, and maybe they just aren't mature enough to fully understand what they're getting into, which, yes, that's exactly why I say 18-year-olders don't need to be going to Buds, because they are not mature enough to fully understand what they're getting into.
Yeah.
You know, because they ask questions like,
and that's the thing is what
tips.
It's what an interesting thing that we live in a time that somehow that's a slant or offensive to that demographic. We're going, no, like the same you, the same 18-year-old you in 2 years, we're saying, yes, go. It has nothing to do with you as an individual. And that's where people go, well, wait, no, I'm a, it's like, you are not special because you think you are. In that regard, it's like what we're saying is like as somebody that genuinely has other people's best interests in mind, you and I, like very few people have I seen that like are giving out so much advice that is so helpful to a demographic between you and I. And it's just so strange that when people still like our advice isn't congruent with their own belief systems, are like, well, that can't possibly be right. Like, it's interesting though that I guess that there's a lot of people out there that are giving bad advice. Maybe that's the reason why people are still hesitant. But
it's information overload for these guys. Totally. You know, totally. I mean, if you're on Instagram and you follow 20 former SEALs, you're going to get 20 different opinions on what you should do.
Yeah.
Right. And some of them aren't useful, you know, like don't quit. Yeah. No, duh. You're not supposed to quit, but you know, and some of them are, but even then an opinion of someone may not apply to you personally.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. you have to understand that as well, especially when you're taking in all of this information. And you got to be able to distinguish someone's opinion and fact. And I will tell you, my opinion is 18-year-olds have no business going to butts. The fact is, you know,
look at the statistics that the Navy is putting out. Yeah, like, we're not advertising statistics. The Department of the Navy is, right? Or the Army or the Marine Corps, whatever it may be. And we're going, hey, like, I'm just a big believer in saying, because if you ask most 18-year-olds this question, you go, hey, if I could say, you know, substantially all things being equal, but in 2 years, not only will you get to training much easier, when you get into the teams, being a little bit older, you'll be a lot more capable person and individual in the unit. It's like, so what do you really want to do? Is it, you know, and that's a tough thing. Cause I get it. It's like, there are a lot of guys that are 18, 19-year-olds that do join the military, not from a standpoint of they got nothing else to do, but they really genuinely like are like ready to like get out of high school and get out of that world and like get into adult life. Like I get it. It's hard for them for us to say, yeah, don't do it. But we're still looking at statistics of special operations. Like we're not saying don't join the military. Okay. We're saying just be patient.
Yeah.
Use the time of training wherever Stu and I are saying, hey, graduate high school. Awesome. Give yourself a year, year and a half to train. Now you're perfectly in the timeline that we're advertising anyway.
Yeah. And you're a little more mature. You probably quit growing now. Your bones are less soft and, you know, you're starting to turn into a man, you know, and it's not a boy's game. It's not a kid's game.
You know? And you said it like, it's like, imagine like we've all seen it. Maybe some of you guys, young kids don't see it. Go, you know, like right now, go stand in the hallway in between class. If you're 17, 18-year-old, go stand there. Like, and then go stand on a college campus and see the physical difference in those bodies. Like the 20-year-old Jeff, right? And I went through buds at 22. 22-year-old Jeff compared to 18-year-old Jeff, we're talking 100-pound difference. Literally 100-pound difference in a man. Like, of course, what a much better opportunity I had physically to succeed, regardless of what my emotional state is, right? Because what I probably would have found out is that, okay, yeah, my emotional state at 18 is totally fine, but my physical body is not ready to handle this. Now I have to come to terms, my emotional state has to come to terms when my physical body failed. But at 20, I won't have to. At 20, I won't have to worry about my physical body failing. Then I don't have to worry about it affecting my emotional state.
Yeah.
Win-win all the way around, man, because that's the biggest thing. We're talking about mental toughness. You want mental toughness, develop it when you can, because you're not going to develop it as a child, especially if you grow up in a house that gives a shit about you, right? You're not like, that's why I look at me as like, man, I grew up in a Partridge Family, completely emotionally sheltered from everything bad. I do not think I could have handled buds emotionally at 18. I just don't. It's easy for me to say that, but it's just statistically, it's looking at it going, oh, that would have been me.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely wouldn't have been able to handle it at 18. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things that I know we kind of digressed a little bit with this one. You know, young kids ask about tips, and you know, but the biggest tip is just be patient. You know, and there's another saying we use: trust the process. You know, there is a process that will answer all of your questions about what tips you need, right? And when Jeff talks about mental toughness, you don't build it in a day. You don't do it over a weekend by running a 100-mile race and being broken at the end of it. The way you build mental toughness is by every single day grinding it out. You know, waking up early when you don't feel like waking up early, and you get that done. You jump into a pool when you don't feel like jumping into a pool, and you get that workout done. Those are just little bits of steps that you get a little bit more mentally tough every single day. And if you can add a couple of years to 18 years old, getting a little bit more mentally tough, specifically training for what you're trying to do versus maybe a few months of specifically training for what you're trying to do, you're going to see a huge difference in your success rate.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And that's the thing is mental toughness, guy. I get it, man. We've got all these self-help books and all these motivational speakers and all these iconic life-changing motivational events with people. I get, but the reality is that all of us that people tend to want to look up to and emulate, like, but it's like whatever success that is perceived by you and I, it certainly wasn't garnered overnight. And that's the thing, is the process of you and I becoming coaches wasn't an overnight thing. Certainly getting through the process of BUDS and SF and all those sort of things, like that's the only thing, in my opinion, in which the person going through selection can like anchor their faith and hope in. It's the process and that preparation. It's like the one thing you're like, I know I physically prepared for BUDS. I know it. And when you show up, you go, yep, found out. Yep, I totally did. And then there's no stressor correlated to, man, I wonder if I'm going to make the time. Imagine eliminating that from BUDS, knowing you did, knowing after the first week of BUDS, you're like, oh man, I totally going to handle this. That is what Stu and I are advertising in our teaching. Is that we are certain that if you listen to our processes, our principles, one of us, both of us, either of us, doesn't matter which one. If you go through that timeline, you show up to BUDS, you're going to show up first week and go, oh, I totally prepared for this. Is it going to be easy? No.
Nope.
But that's the beauty of preparation. That's mental toughness.
Yeah. And, you know, you're going to find too that you're able to actually not worry about surviving. You're actually thriving in that environment, and you might even win something, or you'll be in the top 10% of the class. Because I tell my guys all the time, you don't want to fall anywhere lower than the top 20% of the class.
Yeah.
You know, the reason why is because 80% attrition rate means if you're not floating around that top 20 in most events, you're going to have a really hard time getting through, you know, a program that has an 80% attrition rate.
Yeah.
Now, obviously you don't have to be top 20 on everything. You might be middle 50 at something, but you better have other events that put you in that top 10 to balance you out.
Yep. Yeah. And that's the thing is, like you Stu said it as well. It's like when you get to BUDS, your goal should be to compete. Right. Be there and be in the mix. Cause that's all you've got. Like, that's all you've got when you show up to the selection. It's like, number one, check, show the cadre and the organization that you prepared. And then your next step is show them how well you prepared. That's what you get to do after week one or two. Cause first week of BUDS is just survival. It's just like survive the mayhem and the confusion, get through the stuff without failing. Second week, right? By week two, 35 people have gone away, right? By week three, another 35 people have gone away by the end. You know, so you start looking at it going, okay, it's like, you can kind of hide in the madness a little bit. You can't escape, but you can kind of keep moving and stay competitive that first week, man. And you'll be good. You'll be good. Cause that's the thing is, like, then you can't hide. That's the other side is like, by week two and three, by hell week, you can't hide in a crowd. It's game over then.
Yeah, the crowd's much smaller by then too.
Yeah, there's no crowd after hell week.
So, Jeff, any more tips?
No, and that's, again, it's, you know, I know we vent a little bit, but I think this is all for a purpose, because whether you're asking us for advice or when you get the unit and you're asking for advice on how to skydive and shoot, right? It's funny because the way in which Stu and I teach our process is essentially the same way that we kind of learn the processes within naval surface warfare, the shooting process, the skydiving, all that stuff. It's entrenched in objective measure, which is why the SEAL teams do things so well, is because it is shrouded in objective measure. What does it mean? It's like they call them touch points with the pistol. It's like, right, touch, touch, touch. Like all those touch points, everything is shrouded in objective measure.
And assessed.
Assessed
constantly.
And that is what Stu and I, ours is just, it's an extension of what a good process is. It's entrenched in objective measure that can be reproduced and can be measured.
Yeah. So my tip is, instead of asking for tips, come at it, and it doesn't need to be a book about athletic history and what your goals are. All you have to do is say, my goal is this, my current times or reps are this, how can I improve blank?
Yeah.
Right. If just by that concise little bit of information would be able to trigger an answer for you versus, you know, got any tips on running? Okay. I love it.
Do my programs. That's my answer now. Do my programs.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll get to guys. Keep the emails coming. Cause like what you see, like we probably, the same people probably email us both multiple times a week anyway, to see if we're going to answer same or differently or whatever. But I think by this point, people have figured out we're pretty much on the same page.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. Every now and then I get one of those, Jeff says this, what do you think? I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's a great way to do it. You know, and then I say, I have a way to do it. It may not look exactly the way Jeff's is doing it. Might be real similar. I don't know. But at the same time, you know, follow the one that works for you.
There you go.
You know, it's I have a way to train, not the way to train.
Yep. You betcha.
Yeah.
So we'll do it again, Stu.
All right, Jeff. I appreciate it.
You betcha, anytime.
Hey, until next time, you guys go check out performancefirstus.com. Jeff will hook you up there with his programming. StuSmithFitness.com over on mine. Plenty of articles to read if you're wanting to learn a little bit about something, as well as programming as well. So until next time, we'll see you next.